This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. If you're looking for adventure, caves are a great option. Southern Indiana has lots of them, but a handful of them are developed to accommodate just about everyone. Show Caves take the public through a subterranean world once only reserved for the bravest of explorers. Today, we'll talk about all four of Indiana's commercial caves and learn a little about why we have so many caves and what it takes to explore them. We're joined now by five guests. Steve Calhoun is owner of Marengo Cave. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Claudia Yunt manages Squire Boone Caverns. Hello, Claudia.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much.
Jim Richards is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns. Hi, Jim.
Hi, everybody. Good to talk with you today.
Gary Robertson owns Indiana Caverns and is a longtime cave explorer and show cave developer. Gary, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting me.
And finally, Sam Freshour is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns and the author of A Guide to Caves in Karst of Indiana. Sam, it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
So, Sam, I'm going to start with you. The title of your book includes a term that some of us may not have heard before. What is karst?
Well, karst is a landscape term that comes from the Carso Plateau of the former Yugoslavia, and it is characterized by features that indicate there's something going on underground, such as solution. Well, we've got a lot of people, particularly in southern Indiana, have seen sinkholes, those depressions. Well, we've got the springs. We've got some of these dry stream beds and deep pits and the cave entrances, and to some extent, the caves inside them. That's just the main karst features, but they're indigenous to soluble bedrock. And hey, we live on top of limestone, so it's soluble. But there are also caves in gypsum. In fact, we have major gypsum in Indiana. It's just pretty deep, and there are solution features in it. But I'd be glad to answer any questions.
How much of Indiana is karst terrain? I mean, if we were to look at a map of the state, where's the karst?
Okay. Well, if you go to Martinsville and then in kind of an inverted V from Martinsville to the Ohio River is the region that we call the Mitchell Plateau, formerly Mitchell Plain, and the Crawford Upland. And those are the kind of upland limestone regions, and that is where most of the caves are. Now, if you go to southeastern Indiana, there's the Musketatuck Plateau, which also has caves, and not quite as highly developed as the areas I mentioned previously.
Are there differences between the two karst regions that are worth mentioning?
Certainly. The Crawford Upland is characterized by ridges and valleys and a few surface streams. The Mitchell Plateau, Mitchell Plain, and it's not really a plain. It's sometimes referred to as a low plateau. It's not flat like a plain, and plain is kind of a misnomer, but it's characterized by large areas, at least south of the southeast fork of White River, large areas with numerous sinkholes. I mean, so numerous that they often are coalescing from one to the other.
Hmm. Jim Richards, you, along with Sam, who just spoke, own Blue Spring Caverns. All of the caves represented today have interesting histories. Let's start with yours. What's the history of Blue Spring? I understand the entrance that you walk into used to be a farmer's pond.
Yes, the local folklore has it that in 1940 or 1941, one of the two, what was a small pond in the pasture area of a Colleglazer farm, after a heavy rain overnight, the pond disappeared, and lo and behold, there was a fairly sizable opening with a fairly deep drop leading into caverns below, and this was the beginning of what's known now as the Cogglazer entrance to Blue Spring Caverns. Earlier history of Blue Spring Caverns relates to the spring on the White River called Blue Spring, where the underground stream system that makes up the caverns exits to the outside. And back before the dam at Williams, Indiana was built in 1912, occasionally explorers would take a boat back in there various distances, depending on what part of the folklore you believe. And so that was a entrance that kind of went in by canoe or boat, and probably even back in the pre-settlement times, Native Americans used that as a shelter or a source of water, and maybe went back in a little ways from time to time.
So you're talking about multiple entrances in the what I'm assuming is an entire cave system, the Blue Spring Cave system. How many entrances are there? You utilize one of them, but there are others?
Yeah, there are, as far as open entrances go, three others that enter into above water parts of the 21 and a half miles that make up Blue Spring wow. Caverns. And then, of course, the spring entrance, which is flooded year round due to the backwater from the White River, from the Williams Dam on the East Fork of White River.
Claudia Yunt, what about Squire Boone? We're getting into the history of these caves. So who was Squire Boone, and why is the cave named after him?
Squire was Daniel Boone's little brother, and I'm sure everybody knows about Daniel. The great thing was that someone got to write down all of Daniel's adventures, and Squire's adventures really didn't get written down, so they were kind of lost. But Daniel and Squire did travel a lot together. Squire was his little brother and thought a lot of his big brother. And in 1790, they both discovered the entrance to our cave. Now, I say entrance. It's not the entrance we use today. It's actually the entrance that is at the grist mill. And when you're at the grist mill, you can look up onto the hillside and you'll see the water flowing out of it. And that was the entrance they found back in 1790.
And anything else interesting about the history of that particular cave? Was there a reason that they were there?
There was. Daniel and Squire had heard that there were Indians in the area, and they had talked about some entrances with cool water, et cetera. And they believe the Indians in the area used the entrance of the Squire Boone Caverns to keep things cool, milk or other things like that. So they utilized that cool water coming out of the cave. So that really came into play. And also, years later, the Morgan Raiders came through the area. And because Squire had built his mill a little ways off the main creek, Morgan's Raiders passed right by. He did not burn Squire's mill, but he burned all the other mills along Buck Creek. And Squire's mill was the only one still functioning. And that was very beneficial to them back then.
Steve Calhoun, I'm going to come to you. As I understand it, Marengo Cave is Indiana's oldest show cave in terms of how long it's been open to the public. What do we know about its history?
Well, it was discovered in 1883 by two kids, Blanche and Oris Heaston. And they actually get credit for the discovery. And, of course, the Stewart family, very quickly after the discovery, realized what a gem that they had, and literally opened it just literally a few short weeks after the discovery, and it's been a show cave ever since. So 1883, our official discovery, but because it was discovered by the two kids, they do get the credit for it, and the rest is history.
And so what did, I don't know, showing the public through that particular cave look like at that time? Do we know much about that?
It was actually by candle. That was actually how the cave was first discovered. And many caves in those days were actually found by people just looking around. And one of the most common sources of light then was candle. Obviously, it graduated into lantern in later years. And then, of course, as we know it today, with electric lighting from start to finish. So the great thing about show caves today are that you don't have to worry about dim lit passages. Great pains and efforts have been taken to electrically illuminate all the passages. So when visitors come to see what's hidden beneath the hillsides, they literally get oohed and awed by the formations that they see from start to finish. And Southern Indiana really is a treasure to be found when people are looking for places to go, especially when they're looking for caves, because all of us have something really unique to offer.
Gary Robertson, we've got just about a minute left in this segment, but we'll continue part of this when we come back. But we're going to go, I guess, straight from the oldest show cave in Indiana, Marengo, to Indiana's newest show cave right now. So when did you open Indiana Caverns?
Indiana Caverns opened in June of 2013 for the first time. And so we're still the newest show cave in the United States, and very few show caves are being developed these days. So we may get to hold that title for a long time.
So I guess in about 15 to 20 seconds, why is that, do you think?
Well, the cost of developing show caves is very expensive. It's labor intensive and it's underground. So you can't bring backhoes and heavy equipment underground to do it. And so, the only reason Indiana Caverns opened was it was developed by cave explorers who did it for little or nothing.
And we are talking today about Indiana's caves. We'll be back with our guests after a quick break, specifically Indiana's commercial show caves. And we'll talk more about developing show caves when we come back. You can also get a hold of us with our free all-in Vox Pop app. You can send us a high-quality audio message with that and also keep up with the show. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in just 90 seconds. This is All In. Hey, it's Matt. Today's show is an encore from mid-November, but it was such a fun Indiana-focused conversation about something other than the pandemic or politics. So we thought we'd bring it to you again. We hope you enjoy it. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about Indiana's caves. There are over 3,000 of them, but today we're focusing on the ones you can tour. There are four commercial show caves in Indiana, and we're joined by Steve Calhoun, owner of Marengo Cave. Claudia Yunt manages Squire Boone Caverns. Jim Richards is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns, along with Sam Freshour, who is also the author of A Guide to Caves and Karst of Indiana. And Gary Robertson is with us as well. He owns Indiana Caverns. Gary, before we went to the break, we were talking about developing show caves, and you've been involved in developing Indiana show caves for a long time. What else have you done?
Well, when I was real young, I started out helping one of three people who helped do the physical development of Squire Boone Caverns. Like I say, it's a labor of love. And after that, I went on to Marengo and helped redevelop Marengo Cave and was there for 28 years. And then I was out of the business for a few years and got looking around. You know, the cave bug gets you in your blood. And I had started crawling around in the Binkley Cave system, of which Indiana Caverns is now a small part, back when I was 20 years old in 1967. So I started looking for a way to develop it in 2003. And took me a long time to find a section that was logistically able to be developed without being just astronomically expensive. And so we started the work in 2012, and just a half a dozen of us worked underground on that, and we opened in 2013.
And how did you know that this particular section, the one where you have the tour going through there at Indiana Caverns, I mean, what made you decide that that was the part of Binkley that was not only logistically simple enough to get the public into, but also interesting enough to maybe make people want to come back?
Well, the Binkley Cave System is one of the largest cave systems in the whole world. It's over 45 miles long now. And so there were several places that potentially could have made a good show cave, But the logistics are that because of the type of limestone that it's in, thin bedded, you would have had to have an elevator in most places going down at least 150 feet. And that's tremendously expensive. Really, the government's the only person that can afford to develop a show cave with an elevator in it. In 2012, we were surveying a part of the cave, just mapping and exploring it as fun. And we radioed a room and found it was only 25 feet below the surface. And that was one of the few places, really the only place, that we could put in an entrance to a show cave without an elevator. And it happened to be a nice section of passage, big rooms, underground river, could have a boat ride, and a lot of different things. It had a lot of pretty flowstone in this big room. And the icing on the cake was, we found out it had a lot of Ice Age animal bones. There had been an entrance into this room that had closed up back in the middle of the Ice Age about 35 or 40,000 years ago. But when it was open, literally tens of thousands of Ice Age animal bones were found in the cave, where they'd fallen over a drop off and couldn't get out of the cave. And so that's one of our big features, besides what you expect to see in a cave. We have boat ride, Ice Age bones, plus formations and big rooms, and you get to see cave life along the underground river.
Sam Fresh Hour, we got a great question from John on Facebook, who asks, how would a person survey or map a cave to see where it goes? And Sam, I understand you have extensive experience in surveying and mapping caves. How would you answer John's question?
Well, actually, it's not that much different than above ground, except we're a little bit more crude underground. It's a terrible place to take very sensitive instruments. A common question is, do compasses work underground? And yes, they do. And so that's what we use, is compasses and tapes. A person who's very skilled can record all the physical distances and then also draw very accurate sketches of the cave. In this modern age, there are also wonderful electronic instruments that help in that way of determining the azimuths and distances. But basically, yes, we're still using magnetic north as the main avenue for mapping.
Grace on Facebook asks, how did each individual get involved in the exploration, development, or running of the show cave that they represent? And Gary, we kind of heard from you. You've been exploring Binkley Cave since the late 60s, right?
That's right. My first trip was in there in 1967. And when I was a Tenderfoot Boy Scout in 1958, my very first camping trip, I crawled into a cave. And I was bitten with the cave exploring bug as 11 years old. And I'm up in my 70s now, and I can't do what I used to, but I still like to go out and explore them.
And Steve, how involved in cave exploration have you been? I mean, have you been to what you would consider every inch of Marengo Cave?
I wouldn't say every inch, but boy, I still try every week. So that's the good thing is, and actually I got started, I guess, as Gary had said, you kind of get bit by the cave bug. Either you love it or you don't, when you're in either cave management or cave ownership. And that really is, it's true on so many levels. But I actually got my first taste as a young kid, cave exploring, coming actually to Marengo, at, I guess it was around 12 years old. So, I was in sixth grade. It was a church outing, and got to come cave exploring, loved it then. And then, one of my early jobs as a teenager, I started at Marengo. I actually applied as a guide, and I started from the ground up. I actually started as a regular tour guide, like so many of our other teenagers. And over the years, I worked my way up through positions, from literally guiding through the commercial cave
to giving the natural trips, the cave exploring side of things. Also went into parts of management and actually taking our reservations. And then 27 years later, here I am. So it's definitely true that you either love it or you shouldn't be in the business. And I think all of us are pretty much like that. That if you love it, you really love it, and you take on so much more than what you do. Your day-to-day ownership of all the jobs you do, whether it's literally cleaning the cave, making sure that it's in pristine condition for the guests. Sometimes we all wear maintenance hats. So anything from literally making sure the park is kept clean and welcoming, planting flowers, mowing the grass. You do a little bit of everything, but that's what we do. And we don't sit behind desks and dictate what other people should do. We get in and roll up our sleeves and make it happen. And that's probably what makes me respect other cave owners and operators, is I see so much of that. And I appreciate it because I know what I have to do on a day-to-day basis, and I see it happening with them every time as well.
Claudia, what about you? Let's help answer Grace's question. I mean, I know you've been involved there at Squire Boone Caverns for a long, long time, but how has the development of Squire Boone, evolved in the time that you've been there?
Oh, goodness. I started at Squire Boone Caverns just to get my way through college, and that was 35 years ago, so I'm telling my age. But I did the same as Steve with Marengo Cave. I started here as a tour guide. This was just going to be a stepping stone job, you know, to my next endeavor. And at graduation, there was something about this cave that just, it's an addiction. You fall in love with the beauty that is underground. And once you understand it, and once you understand how magnificent it truly is, and how Mother Nature did this all by herself, and us humans didn't mess it up, it is still mind-boggling to me. After 35 years, I can still go into our cave, and my mouth will still just drop open because of the beauty and everything that Mother Nature has done all by herself. In the 35 years here, you know, our Pioneer Village has grown a little bit, but our biggest accomplishment was back in 2016 when we opened a new passageway. And that took us several years to put in the lighting and put in the new walkways. But I believe we have definitely benefited from the new passageway, and we've added a section of cave that no one got to see up until 2016.
We are talking about Indiana's show caves today. We have representatives from Blue Spring Caverns, Squire Boone Caverns, Marengo Cave, and Indiana Caverns with us. And we're getting so much great engagement from our audience. We have a listener voicemail here from Lawrence, who has a question about limestone. Let's listen.
This is Lawrence from downtown. What is it that makes limestone turn into karsts, these little mountains, or stay flat the way they are in the Yucatan Peninsula and in Indiana?
That sounds like a Sam Freshour question. Sam, how can we help out Lawrence?
Well, I bet we can. First, there's nothing you can really call a karst. A karst is a kind of a family of features. And what is really happening is that that water that's going through the fractures in the rock, whether it be in Indiana or the Yucatan or Carlsbad Caverns or whatever, the water flowing through the rock, through the fractures, dissolves it. Limestone is somewhat soluble. Lots of things are, given time. And anyway, these great cavities are the result particularly in the eastern part of the country, are the result of a lot of solution, and then you might get some collapse that then is acted on by the water again, and kind of a cycle of enlargement and collapse and enlargement. And well, that's pretty much how you get those things.
Gary, go ahead, please.
The caves down in the Yucatan for Lawrence's are generally closer to the surface, and so they're more shallow and there's more openings and collapse into them. The caves in Indiana, although we have sinkholes, most of our caves are 80, 100, 150 feet below the surface, so you don't have as many openings like you do down there.
That's quite Sam, true.
Yeah, Sam, let me bring a few things into perspective here. So somebody visiting a show cave in Indiana might see these giant formations and think that they took millions of years to form. What do we know about the age of Indiana's caves?
Well, we know a lot, actually. First of all, let's go back to the late Permian time, period. That's, a little over a million, some people say about 2 million years ago. This area was a peneplain. That is, erosion had made everything just flat. And at that time, then you got the awesome continental uplift and lowering of sea levels, and now you've got hydraulic gradient, and the water is eroding valleys, and in that process of eroding valleys, it's also finding its way into the existing rock, and so most of our caves, at least if you go, first of all, they're less than a million years old. And you could probably put most of the caves into the previous couple of glacial periods back, say back 250,000 years is all.
How does that compare to other caves we might have heard of? Like how old is the limestone in other parts of the country? Just a couple examples, maybe.
Well, it depends on where you are. In the Grand Canyon, you've got Precambrians that are, a billion years old, and in Indiana you've got the oldest limestone we've got on the surface now. The oldest rocks at the surface are Pennsylvanian age, and Pennsylvanian. I call it 400 million years old, and that gives you a good range. Sometimes if you visit certain tour caves, they'll tell you their caves are, tens of millions or tens or hundreds of millions of years old, and they're kind of confused, and that's really they're telling you the age of the rock.
Jim Richards, can you take us on a tour there at Blue Spring Caverns, if you will? What kind of tour is it?
We mainly do a boat trip along a section of what is the longest navigable underground river in the U.S. Blue Spring Caverns is blessed to have about 3 miles of navigable underground river, which is actually the main trunk stream for the 21 miles of side passages that branch off all along. So on our tour, we use electrically lighted boats to follow the course of that underground river for about a mile and a quarter round trip. Usually get a chance to see some of the native blind fish and blind crayfish that live only underground in the underground river, and see the solution features, some of the formations that are formed. And since Blue Spring Caverns is a very active cave, it's still in the process of being dissolved and enlarged and growing. So it's more of a more recent developing system than some of the other caves.
Got just about a minute and a half left. Claudia, what about your tour? How does it contrast with that at Blue Spring? What can we expect if we come to Squire Boone Caverns?
Blue Springs is awesome because it is an underground river. We are kind of on the other end. We are all walking. We're walking through passageways that does have streams flowing through, but they're not very large. So mainly our streams are flowing along and depositing minerals down onto the stream bed. So we have formations like rimstone dams, cave pearls, those kind of things in the water. And then up above, we have everything from stalactites, stalagmites, columns, and those kind of things. So we're a lot more decorated because we're not a river.
How extensive is the cave there? I mean, we heard Sam and Jim talk about Blue Spring. Theirs is about a 20-21 mile system. Gary said Binkley's is 45 miles. How long is Squire Boone?
We're a baby.
but are you?
We actually only tour through about a third of a mile. So we are not very long. But, I mean, we know there's more passageway. It's just, you know, the general public doesn't want to crawl. So we go through the main part of the passageway. But I'd seriously doubt if we have over a couple miles of passageway.
Gary, you were kind of involved in the development of Squire Boone early on. Do you know anything about the length of Squire Boone Caverns?
I think Claudia is correct. There's a collapse breakdown. That's what cavers call it. And every cave has them. Where one of the rivers comes out. If you could get upstream of that, we know that there is a sinking stream over towards Laconia, which is 3 or 4 miles away. So there could be quite a bit of cave above that, but nobody's ever been able to get through it so far.
We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking to the owners and managers of Indiana's commercial caves. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. Hey, it's Matt. One final reminder, today's show is a repeat, so we can't take live calls or online comments. But be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on Indiana's caves. There are 4 commercial show caves in Indiana, and we're joined by Steve Calhoun, owner of Marengo Cave. Claudia Yunt manages Squire Boone Caverns. Jim Richards is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns, along with Sam Frushauer, who's also with us. And he is also the author of A Guide to Caves and Karst of Indiana. And we also have Gary Robertson with us, who owns Indiana Caverns. And as I said in the last segment, we're getting a lot of great engagement from the audience. We have a question from Josh on Facebook who says, I know that Marengo and Indiana Caverns both have wild trips available. Are there any chances of Blue Spring or Squire Boone Caverns offering their versions of wild trips in the future? And Jim Richards, as I understand it, there is a wild element to one of the, experiences that you offer in the overnight adventure, is that right?
At Blue Spring, ever since 1974 when we opened, have done our overnight adventures. And this is a group program set up for scout groups, school groups, where they come and camp overnight in the caverns. We do a trip along the Underground River by boat. We go off into one side passage near our entrance area that goes back into a wild section of the caverns on a tour that's not lit and doesn't have trails, so they get to crawl and climb and explore the passageways, and we do some other cave-related activities on that overnight. And then just this year, actually starting next week, we're initiating a new adventure trip into the caverns, what we call a Mystery River Kayak Adventure, and this is a trip by kayak down in the downstream section of the Underground River. And we have about in excess of a mile of river passage on downstream from our entrance that we have never used. And it's a very interesting passage, goes and goes, quite a lot of deep water, and you just get in the kayak and paddle along through what seem to be endless passages as the stream makes its way downstream towards the White River. So we're just starting the first trip into that section of the cave next Tuesday. So it's a new thing for us. We're pretty excited about.
And Claudia, I'll come to you on Josh's question on Facebook. I mean, would it be particularly difficult to offer a wild tour at Squire Boone, or have you ever done it before?
We have not. And we've kind of decided to leave that to the other caves. We do have another cave here on the property that we could do wild cavern tours or wild crawling tours in. But for us, we're kind of happy with the normal walking tour, and we're going to let Marengo and Blue Springs and Indiana and all those guys take care of the wild stuff.
We have another question from Grace on Facebook who says, I know being involved in the development and running of a show cave has likely given you all opportunities to visit show caves, some maybe internationally. What is your favorite show cave, excluding the one you're associated with? Gary, I'll come to you first, since you've been in the biz a long, long time. Are there any that you would point to as being particularly good examples?
Well, first of all, in the United States, depending on your definition of what a show cave is, there's about 90 to 100 that you can go in. And I would say that my very favorite show cave in the United States is Caverns of Sonora in western Texas, which is like walking inside of a geode. The walls are crystals and pure white and yellow. There's really no other cave in the United States that's open that's like that. And there's bunches of caves in the United States that are really great cave. 2 years ago, I got to go to an international show cave owners convention in Italy. And they've got some great caves over there. Although, man, if you go caving in Europe, even in the commercial ones, you're going up and down hundreds of feet. And we think 200 steps is big in the United States. Over there, they think nothing of doing 1,000 or 1,500 steps on a show cave tour. But there's a cave called Frassassi that's got a room that's 700 feet high, and it's got beautiful white and yellow stalagmites that are 75 and 100 feet high, and just beautiful stuff. That's probably the most beautiful cave that I've ever been in.
Steve, I'll come to you next on that question. Have you seen any particularly good examples of show caves elsewhere, either in the country or in the world?
Yes. Actually, I've had the opportunity to travel fairly extensively, visiting a lot of caves for several years now, at least the past couple of decades. And probably my favorite is Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico. And it is an extremely, extremely large cave. And I like it for several reasons, not only for the formations and such, but I like the efforts put into protecting the cave. And of course, one of the things that I really appreciate are bats. And in the evening at Carlsbad during the summer, they actually do what's called Flight of the Bats. And they encourage their visitors to sit and wait. And basically at dusk, when the bats take flight, you literally see thousands upon thousands of black bats darken the sky. So to experience that firsthand has been wonderful on more than one occasion. And it's something that everyone should be able to see and experience at least once in their life. And I definitely feel like I've been blessed to be able to see it multiple times. And it probably ranks as one of my top 10.
We have a listener voicemail from Fred, who has a question about ownership of the caves. Let's listen.
This is Fred from Lafayette. And I was wondering about ownership. Do you own the ground above the cave or just the cavern itself? And also, how much of your cave do you estimate is unexplored? Thank you.
Gary, I'll come to you on that. What I guess, are the rules on cave ownership?
Well, if you're going to charge an admission fee and improve it and take people through, you must own the ground up above the cave, or at least have a lease from the landowner that gives you the right to go under that property. As far as cave explorers, people explore that they're not charging money as long as the landowner lets you go in his entrance to the cave. You have a right to go in it.
Claudia, how much has the pandemic affected how you do things there at Squire Boone Caverns?
Wow, a lot. When the regulations first came down, it was just really tough because inside the cave, you have to be extremely careful. And they're telling us that, you know, you have to sanitize the hand railings between every tour. And those sanitizers can hurt the animals in the cave. So we were very, very cautious. We listened, and there's a group called the National Cave Association, and thank heavens they got a hold of some experts across the U.S., and they gave us some really good advice on safe things that we could use inside of our cave to sanitize those handrails and keep our animals in the cave safe as long as, you know, as much as we do our guests. So that was the toughest obstacle, is how we could protect the cave along with our guests. Our tours were initially cut back to half, and so we ended up taking 15 people on a tour and a masked, you know, of course. And we really have not changed that. We've gone from 15 people to 18, but that's probably about as high as we're going to go until all of this gets under control.
What else is there to do there at Squire Boone Caverns in addition to the cave tour?
Well, during the summer months, we had the Pioneer Village, and basically we tried to do things that Squire's period would have done during the Pioneer's period. So we have candle dipping, we have lye soap making, the grist mill that Squire built, we have rebuilt, and you can see corn being ground. There's also a bakery and a rock shop and some other things. But you can spend, you know, a couple hours definitely above ground, as you know, as much as you can with a cavern tour, which takes about an hour underground. Our newest thing above ground is our barnyard. And that is, we have rescued a bunch of farm animals. So the kids can go through with carrots and grapes and pet the goats and the sheep and the mini pigs. And we try to teach the kids also about how those animals were used during pioneer days and how they are being used today. So everything is educational based, and all the caves are that way. We got to teach our youth.
Steve, what about you? Marengo Cave offers, of course, the two walking tours in the cave, a few wild trips, but what's up on the surface?
Well, we actually have listened to our guests over the past several years. And one of the things that people have, trends, if you will, that people are asking for is one-stop shopping. They want to go to, they want to go out for the day. They want to be entertained for the day. And of course, the cave here at Marengo is always going to be the showpiece. The two tours are always going to be standalone activities by themselves. But there are a lot of families that come looking for activities to keep them busy all day. So we've added several things to do just that, like our pedal cart racing. We offer pedal cart racing for adults and kids. So moms and dads, kids can do it together. We actually have a over 5,000 square foot miner's maze. It's a human-sized maze with checkpoint stations and clock-ins and clock-outs that families are enjoying together as well. A 30-foot sky climber where they can actually pull and tug their way all the way to the top of a 30-foot tower and finish off with a tornado slide. And then some of our other activities, the gemstone mining and the crawl that we've had for several years. So we've really appealed to family units as a whole and making sure that whenever families are coming out that they have activities that keep them busy all day and together. And that's been key. And we've not looked back since. We're actually enjoying it. Our families are giving us rave reviews. And it's all about spending good quality fun time with your family. And they're doing just that.
And for the mineral hunters among us, the rock hounds, I understand that you've developed a rock shop that has gotten some attention.
We have, yes. That's actually one of our new things for 2020. We built a brand new rock shop. We actually broke ground the first week of January, really before COVID-19 hit. And we had received numerous requests over the years asking for more rocks. People are true rock hounds at heart, and they're curious. Many times they ask whether anything that we have in any of our shops are sold that come from the cave are sold in our shops. And of course, that's not true at all. Our efforts are always about the preservation and the protection of the cave. But a lot of our specimens come from around the world. We have some very, very rare and unique rocks and fossils that are brought in from other continents. And we have them in our shop, and it's been going over well. So for people that are a true rock hound that want to enjoy rocks in their natural state, we have unpolished. We actually ratchet it up a little bit and go to several specimens that are very sparkly and shiny for those people that prefer a little bit of sparkle and shine on that. And then we also do a little bit more in jewelry. So very unique items that most people don't see anywhere else. And that's really made that shop one of a kind, kind of a special shopping experience that they get to enjoy during their visit here at Marengo.
We have a listener voicemail here from Steve who has a question about wild caves. Let's listen.
Hello, I'm Steve from Indianapolis. In the 1970s and 80s, friends and I used to explore Buckner's Cave and Salamander and caves like that, wild caves. I was wondering what the status of wild caves are in Indiana right now. And I hope the bat situation, I hope things are getting better for bats in Indiana. Thank you for the show. Bye.
Sam, as I understand it, you know a little bit about that area that Steve is talking about. And I think what Steve was referring to regarding the bats is white nose syndrome. I guess, how can we help out Steve?
Well, I think we can. Yes, white nose syndrome is still with us, and it seems to be pervasive. Certainly in the eastern half of the country, it's slowly crept west. And indeed, literally millions of bats have succumbed to it. As far as the caves he's mentioned, the certain places are, well, let's put it this way. It's more difficult to do wild caving than it used to be in the area where I am because of overuse of certain caves, knocking on cave owners or neighbors' doors at 11 p.m. trying to get in their caves, trashing caves, generally not being very nice. And I mentioned Buckner Cave. Actually, I'm one of the management of that Buckner Cave property, and we have literally clamped down and cleaned it up and made it a good place for cave explorers. And although we require people to be with somebody to who knows what they're doing, we do provide a service to wild caving. He mentioned Salamander Cave. That's on private property that is generally off limits, as there are many other caves. And like I said, it's to some extent it is because of misuse and not respecting landowners.
Gary Robertson, in our last minute, Binkley is the cave that you've developed into Indiana Caverns. It's the longest cave in the state, and you were heavily involved in its exploration. Are there other parts of that cave that you just wish you could show to the public?
Well, yeah, there's beautiful things scattered throughout, but it's you really have to go through some grim stuff to get to a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the really pretty areas, you're going to be laying down in the water with your head just sticking out and the rest of your body submerged and crawling along in mud. Sometimes you have to slither along your back with your arm, one arm in front and the other to get there. So in all these caves, there is a lot of great things to see, but a lot of it is really only appropriate for experienced cave explorers.
To the brave go the spoils, I guess. This has been such a great conversation today. I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time. Gary Robertson just spoke. He owns Indiana Caverns. He's a longtime cave explorer as well, and he's developed a few show caves in his time. Gary, thank you so much for your time today.
Glad to be here. I hope everybody will come out and see Indiana's caves because we've got some really good ones.
Steve Calhoun owns Marengo Cave. Thank you, Steve.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Claudia Yunt is the manager at Squire Boone Caverns. Great to talk to you, Claudia.
Thank you so much.
Jim Richards is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns. Jim, what a pleasure.
It's been good talking to everyone.
And Sam Freshour is co-owner of Blue Spring Caverns and author of A Guide to Caves and Karst of Indiana. Sam, thanks for your perspective today.
Well, thank you very much for having all of us.
I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.